Nick, how do you say your last name?
Spillane.
Okay. What is going on, guys? It is John and the other John, formerly known as Youper, and we have a special guest today, Nick Spillane. Welcome to Woodward Tigers. I believe this is episode 61. Raj and Chris should be joining us momentarily, pretty shortly. And we have our guest, Nick. And the first thing we like to do when we have a guest is we like to ask about kind of their first baseball memory, kind of get, you know, the viewers to get to know you a little bit. So, you know, what is kind of your background? Obviously, you're a Tigers fan. Give us a little insight into you, Nick.
Yeah. No, John, I appreciate you guys having me on and giving me the opportunity to speak with you guys today. So I've been looking forward to it. And yeah, just a little background on me. Living downtown Detroit, grew up in the Metro Detroit area. Huge Tigers fan, been following the team for my whole life, been going to games my whole life. So avid baseball fan and continue to play baseball to this day through a men's league in the Metro Detroit area too. So kind of mix, always staying involved in the game. So that's fun stuff. But as far as like my first baseball memory, I think the very first thing that I can remember is probably, I was born in 96. So like we went to Tiger Stadium, like my dad, my uncle, my mom, me, my brother. I don't know. I was probably like 3 or 4 years old, to be honest. And the first thing I can remember is walking into on the like the right field corner entrance where you could kind of see the old English D with the tiger coming through it, like on the top wall by the entrance. Like I can remember that. And then just walking by a stand with like roasted almonds and hot dogs. Like I just remember holding my Uncle Sean's hand, walking into the stadium. And that's basically all I can really remember from it. But that's like the earliest thing that I can remember for baseball. So I mean, then started a fan.
It is amazing how smells can stay with us for a lifetime.
Right.
You know, the fruit and the peanuts and everything. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, literally every time I go to Comerica or any ballpark these days, it's like, that's the first thing that I think of just walking into the stadium is just the roasted almonds. So that's stuck with me forever. So that's, and children always hungry too.
Well, it's probably a good thing you're at Comerica and not Tiger Stadium, because Tiger Stadium had some other not so good smells here and there.
Yeah.
So it might be a bad memory.
Right. Exactly.
Tiger Stadium was awesome. Don't get me wrong. People hate me for that, but there were a couple things there. A little unsavory. It was getting old, you know.
Mm, sure.
So
sure,
tell us definitely. A little bit about playing in the adult league. What position you play?
So I pitch mainly, but it's basically like a bunch of guys I've played with in high school and throughout college and stuff like that too. Just it's like
you're righty.
Yeah, I'm right-handed. So unfortunately, I feel like I could have made it a little bit further if I was left-handed, I guess. But
are you bringing the heat? Or are you a moxie slot baller?
Yeah, I would say like I'm throwing like a mean 81 miles an hour. Yeah. So I guess I can say that that is what it is. But
no, crafty.
Yeah, exactly. But the competition is actually pretty good. Like, I don't know how familiar you guys are with like the Jimmy John's League that's in the Metro Detroit area. That's like independent ball, but a lot of guys that play in the name of the league is the Detroit MSBL. And a lot of players either have played at local colleges like Albion, Alma, even some bigger schools like Kalamazoo and stuff like that too.
Nice.
But then a lot of guys that play in that Jimmy John's League, if they're 10 years up in that league, just trying to make a professional run, they come and play in our league too. So it's a pretty good mix of talent and stuff. And you get guys that are in their like 30s and 40s too. They're still like good players that played in college and that still want to get after it. So it's a good mix all throughout Metro Detroit. So it's a lot of fun. I've been playing in it for like ever since I graduated high school. So like
nice.
About 7-8 years now. So it's pretty crazy.
And when I was your age, I played adult league as well. And it's a great way to stay involved. Now I'm a high school umpire. How do you guys treat umpires in that league?
You know, pretty good. I mean,
really?
I manage the team that I'm affiliated with. So I kind of have to, especially as a pitcher, I can't really bark back and forth with any umpires. So I try to be pretty polite, but I mean, there's always good dialogue. Like you got to know sometimes when, hey, you need a call here or there and vice versa. Like if you build rapport with some umpires, you might get a few more friendly calls. So I can imagine you're pretty used to that with some familiar guys you've umped in the past.
Oh yeah, you hear a lot of things. There's no question about that. Some good and some not so good, but it's fun.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, overall, all the umps in our league are great. All the people in the league in general, across all teams, even though we got some rivalries going, it's you get to know a lot of people and everyone's fun enjoying the league and want to compete. So it's pretty fun.
Nice.
Okay. We did have a question in the chat from Alex. Did you play college ball?
I did not. No, I played it. I went to high school. I had a brother, Rice, and I played with a lot of good players at Rice, but I unfortunately was not good enough to make any college teams, but I went to Michigan State. So got to enjoy my college experience that way, I guess. So.
Okay. Nice. And speaking of baseball, the WBC is on right now, correct, Duper?
Yeah. Right now, last I saw before we started getting involved going here, Japan's up three, was up 3-0. Excuse me. Mexico was up 3-0 on Japan. Big 3-run homer by Luis Urias. Kind of shocked everybody to put Mexico to a good lead.
Nice. Do you have any thoughts on that? I'm sorry. I'm not a big WBC guy. So if you guys want to add anything to it, I'm not going to be much help with that.
I mean, I was going to say, I know that Sasaki has been kind of the talk of the night, just with him being this like 21-year-old phenom. And this is the first time I've seen him pitch live. I mean, I've seen a lot of clips, but man, just the arsenal of like sitting 100 miles an hour with every pitch, like on his fastball, and then kind of a wipeout slider at low 90s. And then that 90 mile an hour split. It's pretty remarkable, but he's getting out-dueled by Sandoval, and he's been fantastic. And he was really good against the U.S. team like a couple nights ago, about a week ago, I guess. But yeah, I mean, both pretty good pitching duel. Rosarena has been making some highlight plays, and even Paredes has kind of gotten a couple hits and keeping our mutual interest on that Austin Meadows trade. So look, yeah, been a good game.
It was interesting with Sasaki. We're talking about, for folks at home who don't know, his name is Roki Sasaki. He's a 21-year-old phenom from Japan. Depending on when he's able to come over here, he is going to be a highly sought-after talent by all the teams that are going to be bidding. He looked really good right up until he had 3 shutout innings. And in the fourth, he got the first 2 outs. It looked like he was cruising. All of a sudden, there's a soft single, and there was a bloop single. And boom, he hung one, and Garcia crushed it. And all of a sudden, Urias crushed it. And I don't know, it could be a huge upset. I think everybody was thinking Japan was going to take this game.
Mm-hmm. No, In the back of my mind, I'm kind of rooting for Japan to make a comeback, just because I kind of want to see the chance of getting to see Ohtani pitch in the final and with Darvish too. But I mean, Mexico, like they've been a sleeper team this whole time with like Urias and Sandoval, and then their lineup's been pretty solid with the Rosarena, Telez, and Paredes, and a few other guys too, and Urias obviously with the home run today. So got to give them credit for not necessarily being the favorite, but they're sticking around and making a game out of it.
And then for the folks who didn't see it last night, USA put a beat down on Cuba. I'm sorry, Raj, to bring that up. But yeah, 14-2. They scored early and often, and it was just a run scoring festival for the United States. And, you know, they are now a couple of wins away from making me say, hey, it was not worth worrying about that Mark DeRosa has never really managed a baseball game before. So outside of travel ball and his son that he talks about, the team is playing well. You know, the offense really started to come around, and we'll see if they can keep that going for 2 more, whether they play Mexico or Japan.
Yeah, I'm with you. Me and my brother, we were talking a lot about DeRosa. We're like, man, like I don't know if this guy's got it to manage beyond this tournament, but I mean it hasn't really mattered too much at this point. But yeah, I think that they should be pretty well served in the next game. Do you know who's scheduled to pitch tomorrow for the US?
No, I do not.
That's the only real like concern I guess I have with the US team is it's just like, I know that the injury bug has been a hot topic with all these guys in the WBC, but man, it'd be really nice if like even some of the like older guys like a Verlander or Scherzer or guys that at least have established careers and you don't necessarily have to worry about jeopardizing future earnings, like just take a shot and play in this, because it would be really cool to see like a kid like Sasaki that's a phenom pitching against Max Scherzer in a do or die game, you know?
That would be ideal, no question. The way they have to protect their pitching these days, I think you're always going to see these kind of bullpen strong games. And even then, I was talking last week about, well, I'll give DeRosa credit for kind of walking through this minefield of, you know, the relievers can't work back-to-back days. They can't come in. They have to start, a couple of them have to start with a clean inning. A couple of them cannot sit down and come back out. You know, so he's really juggling a lot of stuff in the air. So credit to him so far. And of course, when they score 14 runs, that makes them all a good manager.
You know, right.
We can put JFK over there in charge and we score 14, we'll probably win.
I think I'd be a good manager, honestly. But all right, let's get this some Tigers talk, because we got the WP PC talk out of the way. We got some good stuff for the show that we're going to be talking about the AL Central, kind of giving our rankings. We're just going to talk about what we've seen in spring training, obviously some storylines we followed, what has been encouraging, what hasn't been that encouraging, and then obviously the roster cuts that have been taking place. So make sure to like and subscribe to our channel. And like I said, Raj and Chris should be joining us, but if they aren't, we're going to hold it down as usual. But if you guys want to talk about, we hold it down. But if you guys want to talk about spring training and what has really impressed you, what has worried you, I kind of want to start with Torkelson. You've been the Torkelson guy. I haven't heard any real negative things about him. I've heard lots of positive things about Torkelson. He's hitting the ball really hard. I believe he's hitting around 300 in spring. What are you kind of thinking there? Are you more encouraged? Do you have higher expectations for him this season now that we've seen him kind of hit a little better in spring?
Well, I am happy. I mean, obviously, it's the last 2 weeks. We've been getting these daily updates on exit velocity, and mostly it's been very positive. He's had a lot of balls hit, you know, 100 plus, 105. I think even one was up to 109, whatever it is. And I mean, it's a very simple thing, right? If you hit the ball hard enough, good things will happen. You'll find grass or you'll put things over walls. And I think he's calming down. I think he's looking more comfortable. It's the work he did this year. You know, he looks quicker to the ball. And, you know, hopefully that continues. We can't get too crazy about spring training. We all know that. But, you know, the guy was drafted despite last year's struggles, okay? And there was a lot of ugliness last year. No one's denying that. But he was drafted where he was for a reason. He really showed off well with wood bats in the Cape Cod League. He dominated at Arizona State. He was very consistent year in, year out. The guy can hit. It was worth giving him more and more opportunities because of the pedigree and the draft position. He knew he was going to get them. So it's good to see some really good swings and some consistently good swings. I mean, it seems like every game now, he's peppering a few balls, and that's a great sign.
Yeah, I was going to kind of just follow up on that last point, that just every swing that I've seen, and I haven't gotten to watch a lot of the games live, but just all the clips I've been seeing on Twitter and things, just with the exit velocities, Torkelson's just been smoking the ball, and he definitely hasn't gotten that lucky. But I mean, like you said, it's only a matter of time before he's going to find some daylight here and kind of get on a roll. And honestly, for me, I think that's just been the more encouraging sign, is that because he's been hitting the ball so hard and spraying it right at guys, that, I mean, what more can you really ask from than hitting the ball over 100 miles an hour every time up? And just from a confidence perspective, it seems like every at bat that he seemed a lot more loose, a lot more just consistent with his approach. And I'm not going to get into any of the technicalities of his stance and things like that right now, but in general, just he's got a good mojo. Seems like he's confident in what he's doing up there. And again, it's spring training, but that's all you can really ask for from him in spring training, is at least just putting good swings on the ball and just getting comfortable up there.
You know, more reps, more confidence, more maturity, more experience. I mean, let's face it, it's a tough game. You know, that's not breaking news. And not everybody is a superstar from the jump. You know, he had his struggles. And I think there were a lot of, you know, we heard a lot of whispers of why, that maybe he wasn't open to coaching, that, you know, his confidence was down. We heard it all last year. Everybody had an opinion. But really, I think what it came down to was he needed confidence at the plate. His approach, he just looks way more almost casual up there, or, you know, he doesn't look like he's pressing. And I think that's fantastic. And you know who else is looking pretty good is Riley Green. And you could not have written a better script for the Tigers this year in spring training, besides good health, which is obviously always important, than Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson having a nice spring. Because if this team is going anywhere in the next, you know, year to 4 years, boy, Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson better be a big part of the package of why they're doing it. You know, those are the guys they need to mature and lead this lineup. That makes everything else a whole lot easier for Scott Harris if he's got these two guys in his pocket.
Yeah, and to play the part of Raj, this is a video from Raj. I'm going to see if we can get sound to it. This is just a comparison. On the left side is Torkelson from last year. On the right side is from spring training.
See, the finish is lower than the one in spring training this year. And as Raj noted, seems a little longer. You know, like he last year he was kind of short and abrupt with everything. This one, he looks a little looser, a little longer.
Yeah, but absolutely. Oh, did you have something to add to that, Nick?
Well, I was going to say, just to Youper's point, just about both Green and Torkelson, just obviously having a stellar start to spring training and that being just a huge part of the season. What I was going to say is, I know this happened about a week ago, but one of your favorite players, Corbin Carroll, got that arbitration extension. I can't remember the details of the contract, but I'm just kind of curious to see. I mean, I know we got to watch and see how this season plays out for both Green and Torkelson, but maybe the Tigers kind of try and dabble and see what they can do on something like that for these two guys, just because, I mean, we've had a lot of tough injury luck with Mai Scooble and a lot of these young stars in the draft, but both Green and Torkelson being pillars to the future of the Tigers, that it might not be the worst idea to start kicking the tires on that pre-arb extension to buy out some of those arbitration years.
I like that. That's a good idea. But I don't know. Do you guys think it was kind of an Alavila thing? Because you think that's the reason none of these guys got extended, and now that Scott Harris is there, or do you think it was just more player-oriented? Because I think if it was player-oriented, don't you think we would have at least gotten maybe like one of these young players getting extended? But the fact that none of them did, do you think that was kind of just an Alavila thing, that he just wasn't comfortable extending young players?
Well, let's face it, if Torkelson had, you know, been at least a league average or better hitter last year, it would have been a different equation, what they may have pursued with him. And Riley Green, you know, he was injured and he had his moments, but he also struggled at times. So they didn't light a fire to move him in that direction. But at the end of the day, it's Chris Illich's team. Is he looking to make commitments to young players like that when he doesn't have to? Because the Tigers don't have to sign anybody to a long-term contract like Corbin Carroll or Ronald Acuna in Atlanta, that kind of thing. And those have been great contracts for the teams, I think. You know, they're good for the player. I think Carroll got, $111 million is in my mind. I could be wrong about that. Mm. Obviously, we would all be happy with $111 million locked in, okay? That'd be great. But in the long run, could he make more? Maybe. I mean, he might be. The trade is for the security versus what could potentially be out there for him 8 years down the line. I'm not sure if Alavila was told no by Chris Illich, or maybe Alavila just wasn't looking to be proactive in that sense. We'll never know. Scott Harris has a chance to become his own man in this job. Okay. Will he pursue something like this? If Riley Green looks good early, if Spencer Torkelson has shaken off all the doldrums from last year, will they make that kind of move? I would like to think they would. I think it's smart. It's smart general managing, smart front office work. But again, does Chris Illich want to sign off on something like that and make that kind of long-term commitment? We don't know until we see it.
I think if you look at the Braves, look at what they did. They extended. Isn't Ozzie Albies getting paid like $5 million a year or something?
Ozzie Albies' agent should be barred from ever representing anybody, even to, you know, in traffic court. You should never have anybody for anything. That was one of the worst contracts ever.
I know. They had Austin Riley too.
They've just been a like an army as far as of extending guys with Strider, and they traded for Murphy, the catcher from the A's, and extended him immediately, and Olsen too. Like, their core is just completely locked up for the next decade. Whether I know that they kind of caught a break, like you said, with Albies and even Acuna's contracts in comparison to what you could get on the open market. But I mean, I think it's a smart play. Obviously, like, just comparing it for Green and Torkelson, you got to see a bigger sample size on the field of what they can do. But I mean, like you said, it's smart general managing, smart to look at these guys, just because you know that they're going to be faces of the franchise. That's what you're hoping for. But yeah, the Braves, it's just it's an unbelievable culmination of assets, and they're all coming up at the same time. It's unbelievable.
And I also wonder, with the Braves being open, you know, they're being owned by the Liberty Media Group, right? They don't have a traditional one man, one woman owner. So one thing I've always wondered about that situation is when the general manager and president want to make these moves and they have to get it signed off by the corporate entity out there, are there number crunchers in the organization there who are saying, yeah, these long-term contracts for a player like this make sense? So even though we are committing X number of millions of dollars, there's math behind this, why this will work. Whereas sometimes I think owners are more frail individuals, even though they're all mostly successful business people, and it's, you know, signing off on $100 million plus contract, not always the easiest thing to do.
Well, I don't know. If you see how promising Acuña has been and guys like Albies and Spencer Strider, I mean, I think those are going to be absolute steals of contracts. I mean, Ronald Acuña, I think, can win an MVP in this league, and he's going to be severely underpaid, obviously, Albies as well. Like, I think all 30 GMs, if given the opportunity to extend players like that, I think should, honestly. I think the Braves, they're set for the future. Like, they, like, I don't know, they, to me, have probably the brightest future of all 30 teams in baseball with what they've done with their young players.
Yeah. Yeah. I just to chime in too, and just obviously with a risk and just looking at Strider, I mean, he had a great season last year, but we all know what happens with pitchers. It's very fickle and volatile with guys' arm health and things like that. So there obviously is risk, but not only you just back that up with an organization like the Braves that they've been historically great at drafting and developing talent from within. So even if you swing and miss on one of these extensions, whether it's Strider or Harris or whoever it may be, just the fact that they're able to draft and develop guys and have a next man up mentality, it's not as big of a risk if you're able to have good or replacement level value with some of these guys just from what's come up in the minor leagues. So either way, yeah, they're just a machine, and it's been fascinating to watch. And that was one of the reasons why I was actually really curious if the Tigers were going to make a run at Dana Brown for GM. But obviously I'm loving what Harris has been doing so far, but I think that he's going to really succeed in Houston, just given the track record of that organization too.
Yeah. And if we're talking about young players, it's kind of funny that this has been brought up, because I had a question earlier in our chat about the future Detroit Tigers All-Stars. And I said, maybe we could talk about it on a podcast, but since we're kind of already talking about some young players, you guys just want to kind of talk about, like I said, who will the next five Detroit Tigers All-Stars be? But if you guys want to play along in the chat, go ahead. For me, I went Baez in 2023. I went Green and Torkelson in 2024. I picked Mize in 2025, which maybe some people will be a little doubtful on that. And then I did Parker Meadows in 2026. I know, Uper, you had a couple guys as well. Nick, you're kind of going to have to come with this on the spot, if that's okay. Who do you guys think? Tigers' next five All-Stars. I know, Uper, you had some in mind.
Well, yeah, I'll let Nick think about this a little bit. For 23, I took a stab. You know, he's pitching very well here in spring training. I went with Eduardo Rodriguez, you know, a left-handed, or excuse me, not a right-hander. But anyway, a pitcher who I think has a lot of incentive to come back and have a big season, to possibly opt out and get back on the free agent market. Or, you know, if he stays, he stays. But I think that he's going to bounce back. He's a good pitcher. Last year was just a lost season. So I think he'll be my dark horse to be an All-Star. For 24, I went with Riley Green. And who else did I have there,
John? Terry Skubal.
I had Skubal as a comeback kid, yes.
Yeah.
I love the talent. I'm a big Skubal fan. His injury, I really do believe he will come back and be successful. So I put them in 24. And then for 25, I said the next two All-Stars after that probably aren't in the organization. I think they'll hopefully, if the team is looking like they can contend, I hope they will dip into the free agent market to try to, you know, bolster the offense from that direction. And also, you never know when a pop-up closer is going to come in and have a good couple of months, and all of a sudden, boom, they're an All-Star.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in lockstep with Uper here, as just as far as selections. I think if we're going to pick an odds on bet for this season, just like Uper said with E-Rod, just given the fact that he's got incentive to pitch out of his mind and try and either opt out or maybe be moved at the deadline. So I can definitely see him putting his best foot forward this season. And he's looked great to this point in spring training in the WBC. But beyond that, I mean, for the future seasons, I think it's kind of a toss-up, I would say, between Riley Green, Skubal, I definitely believe is going to come back. I mean, I think even this, at whatever point this season, that we'll get a good showing from him coming back off of that flexor tendon injury. And I would say beyond that, in the 25 or 26 seasons, I would say Colt Keith is my favorite. Just, I mean, he could be up this year, who knows? But I think just what he's shown in spring training and in the fall league last year, and even obviously an A-ball before he had that shoulder injury, but his bat is just looking pretty electric, and what position he's going to be at, who knows still, but he's just been really exciting to watch. And honestly, you can make a case that he was his selection in that COVID draft was like the best move that Al Avila and company made in their tenure. So I'm excited for him. Hoping for the best, all things considered, with health and success, but that would be my pick for either 25 or 26.
Yeah. Oh, God, you.
Well, as you say, Cole Keith definitely, he looks bigger, really maturing and filling out. The power, boy, it's a small sample that we've seen this spring, but it looks real. He's hitting the ball really hard. A couple of those home runs have been mammoth. I love what we see. I'm a lot of people say, oh, I'll get him up here. I think they have the team. Unless things go extremely well this year, the team's not going anywhere special. They don't need to rush Cole Keith. I mean, he had a short year last year. He only had, I think, just under 300 at-bats. And it was a good year, but it was an injury, marred year. Let him have this year. Let him learn. Let him develop. I think they might have something special there. Raj had him as an all-star as well, around 24, 25. So let's hope. I mean, that would obviously be the best case scenario, no matter where he plays. I think the one guy we also haven't mentioned besides Meadows, John mentioned him. I think Isaac Pacheco. I'm really interested to see more Isaac Pacheco. I've heard just through a grapevine of some people I know, they are monstrously impressed with Isaac Pacheco. So does that power come through? Is it real? I think there's a chance it is.
Yeah. The one thing I added was like maybe the number three pick this year, which could be like Wyatt Langford or Dylan Cruz, but that would probably be more like 2027, probably. That'd be years down the line.
It's going to be really interesting if it is Dylan Cruz, if because of signability and what teams want to spend and how they want to manipulate their signing bonuses, if Dylan Cruz falls to the Tigers, that would be a godsend. My goodness, that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've only caught some clips on Twitter of Cruz and Wyatt Langford too from Florida, but both of those guys just seem like the real deal. It's we did get kind of lucky with this first year lottery to get all the way up to three. But and even I know Chris has brought him up a few times, but Max Clark, the high school, I haven't watched much of him either. But all things considered, what I've read, it seems like people are very, very high on him. So great options there. I know just with the Job injury here that people are probably not going to want to take a swing at a pitcher up that high, but there's some good pitching options too. The names are escaping me, but we got kind of
for instance, Baseball America put out their first mock draft, and obviously mock drafts are for fun, right? They're for entertainment. We know that, but they watched baseballs closer than anybody else, and they had Paul Skrines from LSU to the Tigers at number three, big right-hand pitcher, and he does look good. I mean, and he's dominating, so. I would be surprised if all things being equal, the Tigers took a pitcher, but I guess we don't know what Scott Harris wants to do yet. We're learning stuff about him all the time.
Yeah, it will be Chase Adult. Oh, you're good. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that, John. But I was just gonna say, yeah, it will be kind of it'll be interesting just because again, it's his first draft, and obviously the mantra has been controlling the strike zone and having discipline at bats and all about approach. So you would think that he'd want to get a marquee position player, but I don't know. You never know. I guess he's like you said, he's going to be his own man and kind of put his staple on the organization. So we'll see. I'm excited for it, honestly.
Yeah, there's Chase Dollander. Is that how you pronounce it?
Dollander from Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he might be the best pitching prospect. You have Paul Skeens as well, but yeah, just the fact that Cruz or Clark or Wyatt Langford, you're guaranteed to get at least, you're going to have a chance to draft at least one of those guys is pretty exciting. And I think all of them have pretty good potential for the Tigers. I'm hopeful for a position player. I'm so over taking pitchers at the top of the draft. I don't know if you guys agree with that.
Well, Carlos Collazo, who did the mock draft for Baseball America, real smart guy, no question about it. He, just mentioned that with this lottery this year, the teams who jumped were in the top five, there are five, in his early opinion, there are five players that are separate from the rest, right? That there's a little bit of a drop-off from 6 through 10. If he's right, the Tigers really got fortunate this year. They got in at three, like a team like the A's dropped down to the sixth spot. So, and again, with signability and things, that might not mean anything. They might get a great player at six, but I like having the Tigers at three a lot more than six.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's all been pretty lucky just given the initial circumstances with the lottery and things. As far as just who I would want to take, I mean, John, I'm with you. I would be a little hesitant just given the recent news with Joe, but at the same time, if you got your guy and he's a pitcher, like I think you go with best player available after all the evaluations and what your scouting team wants to do. I mean, whoever the team has marked as that top tier guy, regardless of position, I think that you just have to go for it. Obviously the safer move is position player, and given the fact of just the volatility that pitchers go through and you know that there's going to be injuries, it makes most sense just to take the safe pick. But again, it's all their player evaluation process and what they feel is best. So I'm going to trust them, but I would go with you on taking a position player.
It's really interesting with Pittsburgh up there. They've been known to throw some real curveballs over the years, you know, and not necessarily they'll swing a financial deal like they did with Henry Davis first overall at the time and really kind of upset the apple cart for the rest, you know, a trickle down effect on the rest of the draft. So that's where my hope is that Dylan Cruz could somehow just boom, fall into the Tigers lap out of nowhere. Because I do believe just from what we've seen, and, you know, I watch it, there are plenty of people who watch more college baseball than me, but I do watch a fair amount of college baseball. That guy looks like a stud. I mean, there's no question about it. If he's wearing old English D, I think we're going to be happy.
Yeah, I think in terms of drafting a pitcher, I just think like good organizations like the Rays, like the Guardians, they just find a way to develop pitchers. And if you believe in Chris Fetter and the Tigers' ability to develop pitchers, like we have seen a lot of pitching development from guys like, you know, Bo Brisky, who's looked really strong. Joey Wentz has shown some development. I just think you can find pitchers in the later rounds. It's kind of like the NFL. You can find running backs in that second, you know, third, fourth round. I kind of feel that way about pitchers. But for me, if there's a position player that you think is generational or, you know, has a perennial all-star potential, you take him. You know, we've seen guys like Chris Bryant, Carlos Correa, Bryce Harper at the top of the draft. You know, there's been some good pitchers taken at the top of the draft, but I feel like there's also been a lot of good pitchers that have just been found in those later rounds, like Jacob DeGrom, who was a ninth round pick. Shane Bieber was a fourth round pick. So I'm confident they're going to take a position player, but at the end of the day, we're just going to have to wait and see. But I would be pretty upset if they take a pitcher.
We got a lot of mock drafts to read through before we get there.
We got some time. I love those things.
Absolutely.
But yes, this is a roster cut podcast. So if you guys do want to get into the roster cuts, I believe the Tigers roster is down to 41 men now. And today they announced Alex Fedeo and Edwin Yucenta to AAA. I don't think anyone was really too surprised there. Fedeo going to get some starts in AAA. Hasn't looked the greatest in spring training. And Yucenta, again, just a younger pitcher, probably needs some more seasoning in the minor leagues. Maybe a player we see later in the season. And then the other moves we had today, Kervon Castro, who I was a big fan of. I thought he was making a case to make the team. Still relatively young. I believe he's 24, 25 years old. He got reassigned. Miguel Diaz, Miguel DePozo, Brennan Davis, and Jermaine Palacios. I believe that's how you say it. Jermaine Palacios. So the Tigers have 41 players remaining in the major league camp. Out of the guys I just named, was there anyone that you kind of were surprised at, upset with? Anyone that stands out to you guys?
I wasn't going to say no one that I was necessarily surprised about. I guess the one that's more the highlight is just Vaedo, just given his draft status and how he performed last year before getting injured. I mean, that being said, he really hasn't been that great in spring training, just what he's shown at this point. I know that they've worked with him on going back to his kind of natural or original delivery of what he was doing in college. So I don't know if there's a little bit of a curve just getting back to breaking new habits. I don't know how to really describe that. But I mean, in general, for me, Fiedo, I don't know about you guys, but I kind of am seeing a little bit more of a reliever profile if he sticks with that, his original kind of mechanics that he's got going on. And maybe that plays up with his fastball and off-speed pitches. But I know that he's going to work as a starter, and obviously that they're hoping they remain as a starter. But at this point
there
in time,
if you
guys can still hear me. But I don't know what you guys think about that, if you think maybe it's better to shift in that reliever role given his mechanics and things.
I think that, you know, it's starting, the ledger's starting to tilt that way, right? I think that if he's going to save his career, the bullpen is probably the best bet at this time. And who knows if that's even a good bet, because he has not looked good. And he had his, you know, he had his four starts of glory last year where everybody's like, hey, Baeno's here. And then he hurt his back or whatever it was, and so much for that. He has a good slider. And when you think back to when he dominated at the College World Series at Florida, it was just wipeout slider after wipeout slider after wipeout slider. And college guys just couldn't do a damn thing with it. You know, now he's on the big league level. Can he come in and be a seventh, eighth inning reliever who's slider dominant and just can control that pitch and ride that to some success? Because one thing I think with Fido, his fastball, it's really hittable, you know, and he doesn't seem to spot it really well. You know, he doesn't have overwhelming velocity. So he needs he's going to be a one pitch wonder if he makes it. And I don't think that spells starting pitcher unless they really can fix something here at Toledo. I think that means bullpen. And who knows if he's even going to make it as that. But I think if he is going to make it, that's the ticket.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you guys. But I feel like we have so many, you know, starters that are at the major league level. I mean, if you look at what Toledo's rotation is going to be this year, it's going to be a lot of guys we saw in the majors last year. I think eventually you're either going to have to move on from some of these guys or, you know, move them to a reliever role. He could potentially be one of them. I remember he did switch his arm slot, if I'm not mistaken. I believe Alavila, his administration, had Fedeo switch his arm slot when he was drafted. So maybe there's a little hope there that he can kind of get back to what he was at college. But yeah,
they wanted him to come more over the top, and mm-hmm. he had been more of a bit of a three-quarter side slinger, right? And he wants to go back to the old motion as more of the three-quarter.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very interesting season just to see him going back to that. And I think this could be a big year for him as well.
Yeah, I was just going to throw one last note in too, because I know just from a lot of the clips that you guys had posted, or Rod or Chris too, just posting from back when Baeto was starting and even like AA with Urie, like you'd have these starts where it would be five innings with two runs allowed, but the two hits were absolute nuclear home runs. And I mean, it's he had pretty solid command and he put up decent strikeout numbers, but it just like you said, his fastball is just like a little too hittable. And maybe that shift into that bullpen role could give it a little bit more life. But I kind of agree with you. It's going to be slider or bust for him. And if he's able to capture something, maybe that's it, being slider dominant, and maybe hoping that fastball can take up in the bullpen. But I guess we'll see. Who knows? Either way, he's down to Toledo. We'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah. But in terms of like the bullpen, Trey, how do you say his last name? Trey Winger?
Wingenter?
I've been saying Wingenter.
Wingenter? Okay.
Same here.
I want to say, I'd say like Rowan. It reminds me of Henry Rowan Gardner from Rookie of the Year. I don't know why. I want to say that's what comes in my head. But he pitched really well today. He's still on with the big league club, I believe, right?
Yeah.
I think he's relatively young as well, but that would be kind of a surprise for him to make the team. Obviously a high velocity guy. Well, he's 28 years old, so I wouldn't say he's that young, but hasn't given up an earned run in six innings pitch. And I think Chasen Shreve as well has kind of established himself as the number one lefty in the Tigers bullpen. I think he's looked really, really solid as well.
I think the names that we didn't know well or real well at the beginning, who have a shot, definitely, I think you're onto something. I think Wingenter has a good shot. He's held it together so far. What more could he do, you know, to try to secure a spot? And they need live arms. You know, we always forget they have moved on from their four best relievers last year are all gone. You know, Jimenez, Fulmer, Soto, and who am I forgetting? I know I'm forgetting someone.
Chafin.
Yeah, Chafin. Thank you very much. So, you know, there are jobs to be won. They're going to have to give one to Mason Engler. He's pitched three shutout innings today. Look great. Rule 5 guy. He's got to stay unless they can swing a trade for him to gain his rights. So that's one spot locked in. Shreve, we talked about him now for a couple weeks. He's looking solid. And, you know, if spring training results are going to win you a job, he's putting in the work. 2 years ago for the Mets, he had a nice season. And last year, not so good. But that's how relievers roll. So I think those three guys are probably going to break camp.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you both. I think all three of those guys are locks at this point to get into the bullpen. I'm kind of curious what you guys think about Tyler Alexander right now. I don't know if we were going to get to him in a little bit or not, but I know that he's had some kind of up and down outings, but I just think with the state of our rotation and a lot of the injuries that we've seen in the last year, that despite him having some struggles, I think that he's going to kind of be a key piece just because he can give us some length, especially here in April and May while guys are still kind of building up. But him and maybe Garrett Hill or however they plan to deploy Brisky or Wentz too, it's going to be kind of interesting how they're really going to navigate those final spots.
Well, there's no question Alexander has struggled a bit. And if anything is going to save him, it's the fact that he has some starting pitching in his background and that he can go multiple innings out of the bullpen. And he's shown that in the past, and he's been effective at times in the past. So his reputation is going to save him if anything is going to save him. And the needs that, as you mentioned, kind of hinted at, they're going multiple innings out of the bullpen is going to save the club at points. So it really all boils down to is that need more important than a young guy who might be lighting it up out of the bullpen in spring training? You know, that's the balance that, you know, Hinch has to feel. Like, for instance, if it was so drastic they were going to have to cut somebody who they think has some promise, then I would say no. I mean, I would say you keep that kid and you let Alexander go, because we probably have seen the best of Tyler Alexander in the last few years. I don't think there's some Tyler Alexander surge coming, you know? So I think that's something that you can move on from if you have a young talent ready to roll. But if these are guys that they can just get to Toledo without much of a problem, then I think that helps Alexander's case for being there and gobble up some innings.
Yeah, I wonder what they're going to do with Joey Wentz, because I think he's had a good enough spring. I wonder if they would put him in the bullpen because they want him to be facing major league talent, or do they want him to get starts at AAA, at the minor leagues? I really don't know. The only other guy I was looking at was Jace Fry. I know his numbers don't look the greatest in spring, but he did have a really, really bad first outing, but has kind of bounced back since then and struck out 12 batters in 7 2/3 innings. He's not relatively young either at 29. So, yeah, I think Joey Wentz versus Tyler Alexander is kind of going to be the debate that's going to be had there. And I don't know. I think I would kind of prefer Joey Wentz to be facing major league talent. Even if it's out of the bullpen, he can, you know, be a long reliever. You know, you've had those split starts where you've had one pitcher go two or three innings and then have another starter going into, you know, throw two or three innings. We know Turnbull, he's obviously going to be working his way back. So I think maybe Wentz could get more innings than you think out of the bullpen. So I think I'm leaning towards Joey Wentz and Chasen Shreve as my two lefties to hopefully get the nod for opening day.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think that it might be smart early in the season to kind of stagger some of these starters, just given the injury history. The actual selection, like you said, Newport, it's going to be kind of interesting how we're going to see Hinch and Harris kind of dictate whether it's going with somebody that's shown it in spring training or got a little bit more promise, or maybe someone that's not necessarily going to be able to get DFA that you can hang on to for a little bit while you're hiding somebody in Toledo. So, but I do think, kind of similar to you, John, that Wentz is, he's better served staying in the majors, whether it's going to be in the rotation somehow with how things shape out with Manning or even Lorenzen with that injury today. We'll see, but I think I'm kind of with you that I think that Wentz probably should stick around with the big club just to see how he develops, because I don't necessarily know if it's better suited for him to go to Toledo and pitch there.
Yes.
I always wonder with clubs that are in the position of the Tigers, right? They haven't won in a long time. We can debate if they look like they're going to win this year or not, right? How many games and how worthwhile it is to, how much do you need a good bullpen, right? Chris has said this many times, a 74 win team doesn't need a great bullpen or great reliever. They should trade them, right? And it kind of goes to the same at the beginning of the year. Do they owe it to themselves to put the best foot forward and try to win games until it doesn't matter anymore, that, you know, they've lost it in the standings and now they can build for the future? But should they, from April 1st on, looking to win with the bullpen that they bring north, or do they make decisions based upon the future? Like, is it better for Joey Wentz to be taking starts at Toledo versus pitching two innings a week out of the bullpen or three innings, whatever. That's really, you know, interesting stuff. And I can't answer that. So it's going to be interesting to see what Scott Harris's view of that is.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know. I think it's what's really interesting to me is the Tigers have a lot of starters that are kind of like a hybrid starter. Like Michael Lorenz is kind of a starter, but he's also been a reliever most of his time in the big leagues. Matt Boyd was a reliever last year. And then you have guys like Garrett Hill, Bo Brisky, who there's been talk about him coming out of the bullpen. Like, it'll be really interesting to see. Like, Mason Engler is another guy, I think, who deserves consideration to get a spot in the rotation with how he's looked. But I think if you look, like, Eduardo Rodriguez, to me, is the only real, like, I'd say workhorse guy in this rotation. Everyone else is kind of like, you don't really know if you're getting 100 innings or more out of them. And I think it'll be really interesting, like, how many starters, you know, or guys that we think are starters are going to be, you know, put in the bullpen, like a Bo Brisky or Joey Wentz or Garrett Hill. Like, this team could have like 8 or 9 starters, you know, come opening day.
And that's the thing. Let's say Joey Wentz pitches well here these last 2 weeks, but doesn't go north. You know, let's say he goes to Toledo. I wouldn't count that as a big slap in the face for him, because given all the starters that you mentioned and all the innings questions that we have, I mean, it won't be a big stretch that anybody having some success at Toledo will come up at some point and be able to get their 15 to 20 starts, no problem, over the course of the year if they earn it, right? Whether they're in April or if you get them in July, who cares?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Uper. I think that the entire roster, whether it's position players or pitchers, it's pretty much going to be a dogfight as far as these young guys, with Harris not really having the loyalty to a lot of these players, to just kind of see, hey, like whoever can show it and deserves to get up and in the action, that they're gonna give him a shot. So I really do think, like, Brisky being the one example, that I know that a lot of people have talked about him being in the bullpen, but I mean, the guy just pumps strikes. I mean, he's shown an uptick in velocity too. I mean, I don't really know why not just let him ride as a starter and just see what you can get out of him. And then if all else fails, then sure, go to the bullpen, because it seems like that he could definitely thrive in that role if needed. But it just, in my mind, I would rather see some of these guys fail as starters and get that opportunity to then be like, oh, to give them that notion to go into the bullpen. So we'll see. I mean, it's going to be kind of dynamic. There's a lot of options, but there's definitely going to be some injuries and opportunities will be there. So it'll be curious to see how it really shakes out in these early months.
Now, for the people listening at home, Japan just hit a 3-run homer to tie it.
Wow.
Yoshida, the guy who just signed with the Red Sox, just hammered a 3-run homer, 3-3 in the 7th. Mexico, wow. Japan. Should be a good ending on that one.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But speaking of good endings, there's a segue right there. How about we talk about the AL Central? I've been itching to talk some baseball. Obviously, this is a Tigers podcast, but we could talk about the AL Central, because that obviously is going to have a lot to do with the Tigers this year, because they play in the AL Central. But yeah, I've been itching to talk about this division. I think this division is getting disrespected a little bit. I mean, on the last podcast, I think Raj and Chris said that the winner of this division could finish under 500. I think that's ridiculous. I mean, maybe you agree with Nick, but I don't know. Who's your favorite in this division? Because for me, I can honestly go back and forth with about 3 teams in this division and talk myself into it. Do you guys kind of, I don't know if you've made your predictions yet, who are you kind of looking at that could maybe win the Central this year?
I mean, I think that just in general that you kind of have to give Cleveland their props, because it doesn't really matter who's on their roster or what additions or subtractions that they make, that they always find a way to get 85 to 90 wins just based on how they are as an organization, that they always develop some pitching and pull guys out of nowhere that are successful. So, I mean, I think I would put Cleveland just as the favorite right now. I'm really curious to see how Stephen Kwan kind of does in a second season, kind of seeing how he sustains, but their rotation is going to be probably too much to match with Bieber and Cal Quantrill and Adam Savali, I should say. Hoping for him on a little bit of a bounce back. But then they got that kid Gavin Williams, they got Cody Morris coming up.
McKenzie.
Yeah, Chris McKenzie, he's been established. So their pitching, I think, overall is going to take them over the top. I also think the Twins are going to be a lot better this year. They were kind of a disappointment last year, but their lineup is looking pretty jam-packed. They're obviously bringing back Correa and things. I really think the White Sox are going to be fading just because they have a good lineup, but I'm really kind of curious how they're going to uphold through a whole season. I don't think that they have the depth to really sustain and hang in contention, but I don't know. I'm curious what you guys are thinking with that top three.
Well, with the Twins, you know, you think back to that miracle year they had about 2-3 years ago where every ball they put in play left the park. I mean, they had just that absurd home run to fly ball percentage. They looked like they had, you know, cracked the code of how to hit home runs. And that kind of went away a little bit. But they do have power. You know, there's still some guys there. All those guys who hit home runs are still around. A lot of it, of course, goes to Byron Buxton. Are they going to get, you know, 40-game Byron Buxton, or are they going to get 125-game Byron Buxton? If they get 120, 125 games out of them, that's a big difference to what they do. I don't know about their bullpen. I mean, they got Duran, obviously. The guy's great. But, you know, beyond that, you know, although we know bullpen guys can come out of nowhere. I think the Twins might surprise people a little bit, only because people talk about the Guardians a lot more. They brought in Josh Bell. They have the nice rotation. You know, still got Jose Ramirez. That's a good ball club. I think one of those teams are going to finish above 500, John. I don't think the other guys are going to get that one right. There'll probably be a couple guys, a couple teams over 500, even if one of them is just barely. I think there'll be at least two. The White Sox, yeah, you know, the depth issues. They have some really nice starting pitching. You know, Lance Lynn is always going to give you a Lance Lynn effort. Giolito had one bad year a couple years ago, but mostly he's a decent pitcher. Kopech, we'll see, all the talent in the world. And of course, Dylan Cease came out like a storm last year. If he's the same guy, he's a great pitcher. But something about that lineup, shockingly to me, has never really clicked. And I don't know if that was, you know, people want to blame Tony La Russa. I don't know, maybe. But the proof will be in the pudding this year. They have some guys. You know, I thought Lewis Robert was going to be a big star. He's good, but he's not a star yet. You know, Eloy Jimenez hurt a lot. Moncada struggled when been hurt. All those are guys who were supposed to be the big pieces of the puzzle to a juggernaut there, and it just hasn't quite come together.
Yeah, I feel the same way about the White Sox. I just worry about that offense because at the end of the day, you lost your best hitter, you lost your leader, you lost your MVP in Jose Abreu, and you replaced him with Benintendi, and Benintendi's a fine player, but I don't know. They're in a similar position to the Tigers, I feel like, offensively, where they're just looking at these young players like a Robert, like an Eloy Jimenez, like an Andrew Vaughn, who I do like Andrew Vaughn. I think he's a good hitter. But they're just hoping that these guys can kind of carry the mantle and, you know, lift this offense up now that Abreu's gone. And I don't know. And it's the depth problems that they have as well. The rotation, like Johnny Cueto was one of their best pitchers last year. They signed Clevinger, but we don't really know what's going on with that situation. And yeah, there's just so much. I could see it. I could see them finishing last. Honestly, I could see them finishing first. If things go bad and injuries hit, then maybe at the trade deadline, they're looking at another rebuild. So they're just so volatile to me. And the Twins were in first place for the majority of last year. And they just kind of scuffled there towards the end. I think Pablo Lopez is a good pickup, but he also struggled a bit in the second half in a pitcher's park in Miami. I mean, Minnesota is not exactly a hitter's park, I'd say, but I think he could be a decent pickup for them as well. I just worry about the Twins and their injuries, because at the end of the day, if Correa and Buxton aren't healthy, I don't know if I can trust that team to win at least 85 games it's probably going to take to win the division. So I don't know. I think you probably got to go to the Guardians, but I'm worried about them too, honestly, because I think you look at guys like Josh Naylor, who maybe played a bit over his head. Andrés Giménez was an all-star last year. Could he come back down to earth a little bit? And I like Josh Bell, but he's just been so inconsistent. You know, we've seen it with the Pirates. He's been an MVP candidate. And then, you know, the next month, he looks like he doesn't even belong in the big leagues. Like, I don't, this division, I don't really trust anyone. I trust the Guardians the most, but that offense is just not good last year. And I worry that some of the guys that played over their head, like even an Oscar Gonzalez, if they just kind of come back down to earth, like, I don't know, is it going to be an 85 wins is all it's going to take to win this division?
That's a really easy thing to say. I think it'll be more than that. I hope that there's almost always somebody who busts out for 88 wins, right? That's what I would predict. Whoever wins the division will get to 88. You know, we haven't mentioned the Royals.
No.
For a lot of reasons, but I'll tell you, I'm a big Bobby Witt Jr. believer. I think that kid's a star. I think he's a stud waiting to happen. The bust out could be this year. And then you look at Vinny Pascantino, put up a 383 on base percentage with 10 dingers last year in a short, you know, fairly small sample. Can he do it over a big league season? But if he's a legitimate power force with a high on base percentage in the middle of that lineup, that makes things look a lot different than the pop gun offense they used to run out there. So, you know, he had a better rookie year than Spencer Torkelson did. Let's put it that way. So I think the Royals have some talent. Melendez can hit. He's a terrible catcher, but they still have Sal Perez. It's going to be interesting to see what the Royals can do. Basically, can they plug together pitching behind Brady Singer and a bullpen other than Scott Barlow? If they can, then maybe they're a surprise team too. But I think them and the Tigers probably will duke it out for a third or fourth place, fifth place somewhere in there.
Yeah, I think in general, I mean, all the teams in the Central, despite not being the flashiest in baseball, that they're all interesting for their own reasons. But I really do think that the Royals could be the most interesting just because they got a lot of these young guys in their lineup. Like you mentioned Melendez, Nick Prado, Vinny Pascantino. Those guys could take big steps kind of coming into their own here as they get some more experience. And then you got a staple in Salvador Perez, and you already mentioned Witt, who has superstar level potential. So they have a lot of pieces. Nicky Lopez had a solid WBC. He's always just been a solid everyday player. So I'm really kind of curious, like what kind of output that they're going to get from their lineup, because they have decent players and they're all young and it's a good core coming together. But like you mentioned, just the pitching behind Brady Singer, they've had a lot of high profile guys that just really haven't panned out to this point. And I know obviously Granky's there and he's a lot of fun to watch even still at his age right now, but the depth there is not going to get them to anything of prominence. But and then on top of it, they have the signing of Chapman and that whole fallout with the Yankees. Who even knows what you're going to get from him? So they'll be a really interesting team. Might not be good, but I'm really kind of curious to see what kind of step that they take, because they have young pieces, but it's really just a big enigma. So I'm very, very curious to see what happens with the Royals.
Yeah. What are your guys' kind of thoughts on like just the state of the Royals? Because they had 2 years, right, where they make the World Series back-to-back years. They had an incredibly fun team, you know, fantastic defensively, an incredible bullpen. And, you know, other than that, they haven't, I don't even know the last time they won the division before that. They really had just that 2 years of success, and then they've kind of just been at the cellar of the Central for most of this century, if we're being honest. Like, do you guys trust the Royals organization? Do you trust the management to build this back up? Or do you think, you know, 2014 and 2015 was kind of an anomaly, and who they've been, you know, most of this, like this century is what this organization is?
Well, they brought in a new GM, right? They finally got rid of Dayton Moore. And again, Dayton Moore built that winner, you know, to his credit. They had the farm system of the century, supposedly. It took about an extra year and a half longer than they thought to build a winner back in 2013 and 14 and 15. But they did. They got, you know, flags fly forever is what they say, right? They got the flag. They got the ring. So that was a success. Then they let some pieces go. They brought in some guys that didn't work out. And all of a sudden, they were kind of going into rebuild mode too. And they wanted to give Dayton Moore the second chance to do it again. But it wasn't moving forward. That 2018 pitching draft was supposed to have, you know, stars besides Singer. And so far, Singer is the only one. With the new GM, you got to hope, if you're a Royals fan, that the Walmart money behind the Royals will be flowing. It never really has to this point. They've always been a relatively low to mid-range salary club. They don't have an excuse for it, though. They live in a good baseball market with some really good fans who will show up to watch a winner. And again, they have the Walmart cash behind them. They should be able to spend if they want to. It's more a choice when they don't.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there, Yoop, because honestly, like you said, that they have the backing as far as ownership to make some moves. Maybe they haven't, obviously, just because of Dayton Moore kind of not necessarily bringing a second core group up to up to their team in the past few years, but they were kind of hanging in limbo with like the end of Ned Yost's tenure and then into Matheny, and just a lot over the past 3 or 4 seasons. It's been a little bit strange to see, but I'm kind of curious. I can't think of the gentleman's name. It's their new GM, but overall, I think a new fresh approach with them, and they have some young stars in the making, it seems, but I'm just curious to see what they're going to put around them. And if they do add, if they can kind of take a good step forward here this season, to just see what they can supplement through either free agency or trade to kind of add to that roster. Cause it is really intriguing. I think Melendez is a really, really good player that's going to kind of blossom here if he sticks in the outfield. And Witt obviously is fantastic too, but in Pascantino and Prado, they got the bats, I think, and that's the key for them, and just trying to find some pitching, because like you said, that 2018 draft really didn't materialize beyond Brady Singer, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I got one more question before we get out of here, because the AL Central has been just horrible playoff-wise. I believe the last AL Central team to win a playoff series in the playoffs was 2017. No, there's the Guardian, or the, yeah, where they were the Indians. They lost in the first round to the Yankees. I think it was 2016, actually, because, yeah, the Twins lost in the first round in 2019. The Twins, Indians, and White Sox, all in the expanded 2020 playoffs, all lost in the first round. White Sox lost in the first round in 2021. The Guardians, I guess the Guardians won a series against the 6-seed Rays this year. But do you think any of these teams, the team that does win this division, you think they have any chance of really making a run at the World Series, or are they kind of just going to be like a win and out kind of situation, like they have been for the majority of the last, you know, 6 to 8 years?
I wouldn't put my money on it.
Okay.
For that.
Especially if it's the Twins.
Right. Twins. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you look at last year, the Philadelphia Phillies were nobody's favorite to get out of the National League, right? I think a lot of us would have chosen teams in front of them on the day the playoffs started. And they got through, and, you know, they made some noise in the World Series itself too. So it can happen. You know, let's say, you know, the Twins are hitting a lot of home runs this year, and Joe Ryan takes that step up one more level, and Kenta Maeda has a little bit of a comeback. You know, let's say they can throw 3 good starters out there in a series. Who knows? Stuff happens. But again, if you made me bet, then no, I wouldn't put cash on them.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, especially just the Twins. I think that they're just kind of cursed when it gets into the playoffs. They just run into the Yankees, and they're always a buzzsaw for them in the playoffs. But I mean, in general, I think that they probably had the best chance of advancing of any of the teams if they were going to get in, just because the lineup is so deep, and they have it, in my opinion. I know the White Sox starters, I think, are a little bit more high profile with Cease and Giolito, Kopech, and Lynn. But I think the Twins, I think, overall have the most competitive chance just because of Jose Miranda. You got Gallo. I think this is going to kind of have a big bounce back year for them. And just in general with their rotation with Lopez and Joe Ryan, like you mentioned, and I think, and even Sonny Gray too, to some degree, I think that they got the pieces in place to maybe take a series in a 3-game format. But I mean, just for whatever reason, that they always just get bounced immediately. And who knows?
I'm a big believer in power in the postseason. You know, I just think it's really hard against the best teams to score consistently. If you're hitting singles, bunting them over, getting another single, long sequences of good things happening are tougher to come by in the playoffs. It's much better to draw a walk and hit a home run. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the way I view it. And I think the numbers bear it out that the team with the most extra base hits tends to win every playoff game. Or most playoff games, excuse me. So the Twins have some of that capability, perhaps, if things go right this year.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the Guardians, they have the pitching, I think, to the capable of winning a World Series, even in the bullpen. Emmanuel Clase is one of the most electric relievers in baseball. And they have the farm system to make a trade for a big star. I'm not going to go as far as to say they could trade for Shohei Ohtani. I mean, they have the farm system too if they really wanted to, but that's not really how they operate. But I think if they really wanted to go all in this year at the trade deadline, they could move some of their top prospects to get some big time bats in their lineup. But that, you know, we're going to see
Well, and that frankly, that comes down to ownership commitment too. I mean, we talk about players and GMs a lot, but a lot of times it comes down to the ownership. Will the ownership in Cleveland want to add $10 million at the trade deadline to their salary cap, you know, to their salary structure, $12 million, whatever, is a shot at winning a World Series worth it to them to add that payroll at the trade deadline? Some, you know, to this point, hasn't always been the case.
Yeah, but it's, but what, I mean, what they've been doing is working, and you can't deny that. They've been probably one of the most successful teams in the AL Central. I know they didn't win a World Series, but they've come pretty close and have been, you know, finishing over 500 for most of the last decade. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it'll be an interesting division. I think people need to give it a little more credit. I don't think two teams from this division will make the playoffs. I think that would be really surprising if two teams from the Central made the playoffs. But obviously no mention of the Tigers. You know, we're trying to be realistic here. They'll probably finish fourth or fifth, maybe if the White Sox collapse, a third place finish. But that's kind of just the reality of it.
I am kind of curious what you guys do think for, I don't know if you want to put a record out there right now for the Tigers, but I mean, am I just in general of looking, I know Fangraphs put out that article, or I think it was Fangraphs probably about a month or so ago, just basically saying that it can't go any worse for the Tigers this year, just based on the injury luck and the performances that we saw. I mean, I guess I will say it's like, I know that we got a lot of new faces and we're hoping on a lot of bounce backs with Torkelson, Scope. I know he's got the track record, but we'll see how that situation is handled. And you bring in Buehrling and Maton here too to kind of contribute with some of these battles. But I mean, I wouldn't be entirely shocked if the Tigers find themselves even like a 75 to 80 win range, just because, again, the expectations of what they added with Erod and Baez last year and then Meadows just before the season. There's a lot of reason to think that they'll bounce back. I mean, I know maybe I'm thinking glass half full for a lot of this, but I mean, there's the division really, like we just walked through all these teams and none of them are really, no one's really sticking out as like, man, that this team's so formidable that the Tigers can't at least hang with them. So I think that the Tigers can at least take advantage of a very hodgepodge division to at least make it a competitive summer.
For me, I've made this joke before, but I'll say it again. I know the Tigers have a really wonderful opportunity. They have great odds here to win the Comeback Player of the Year award, because they had so many guys that had bad years last year for various reasons. Somebody should pop back, right, and have a good shot at the Comeback Player of the Year. I'm hopeful it's Austin Meadows. That would be my first choice. I'd love to see it. But Rodriguez and Baez both, I mean, they were signed for a reason last year. They didn't come through. But both are legitimate guys who could have much better campaigns. So those three guys right there, if they suddenly become, you know, just slightly even above league average production, they take a big leap from what they produced last year. And then to me, it all comes down to the only thing I'm really, really watching closely: Riley Green, Spencer Torkelson. For this team to go places, they have to be a big part of the equation. If that happens this year, then I think the window I'm about to give you for wins goes up. But right now, when we don't know what's going to happen, I have them about a 71 to 74 win window for wins this year, right in that range.
Yeah, I think Raj will be mad if we give our exact prediction. So I'm gonna hold off at a later day. But Nick, I want to get your predictions. Give me like your official, like exact win. Like how many wins?
I'm gonna go optimistic and I'm gonna say 77 wins for the Tigers. And that's, again, I'm very hopeful. Maybe that's ignorant to be hopeful, but I do think that, like you mentioned, Uper, just Austin Meadows, I think him with his track record, and I don't know if he's going to be the 30 home run guy that we saw in Tampa in his all-star season, but I mean, I think that he can get to at least being a 15 to 20 homer guy. And I know he struggled a little bit in spring, but he's starting to hit the ball a lot harder. And I honestly think too, a little bit of it, it's at some point Parker Meadows is going to be up. And I think that just a little bit of mojo playing with your brother and competing with your brother, that I know he had the mental health struggles that he was going on with last year, but I think that that might play up to help him kind of ease into the role with the team here too for a second season. Then, I mean, Javi Baez getting to spend some time with Hinch over the offseason in Puerto Rico. Obviously, Bad kind of coming back from his situation. I think that there's, like I said, a lot that went wrong, but there's just, I'm hoping from a mojo perspective that at least just getting things back together will at least create a positive vibe for this team. So that and Torkelson obviously showing a lot more confidence and being a little bit more relaxed here in spring training. I'm just hoping more so from energy and positivity perspective that that's going to propel them into playing a lot better. Because in baseball, it's a lot of it's just feel and confidence and up, yeah, what's going on upstairs. So that can change a lot if things don't spiral.
Yeah, I don't want to give my exact prediction, but I will say last year, 66 wins was the absolute worst case scenario. I don't know how you can go lower than that. And I do want to say for everyone that is down on the Tigers and saying, oh, they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league, I feel like a lot of those same people were saying going into last year, this team could win 80 games. This team could be, you know, finish 500 or above 500. And, you know, now they're, this team got better. At the end of the day, it got better. This team, the 2023 Detroit Tigers are better than the 2022 Detroit Tigers. The same team. I saw that, Ufer. The same team that a lot of people, that's a debate for another day. The same team a lot of people were looking at that could be surprising. You know, all these same people are now just kind of flipping the switch. And I understand last year was tough. I understand it was a long season. But this has happened before, you know, where teams have had bad years and then they bounce back. I don't want to give my official prediction, but I agree a lot with what Nick said. I think this team deserves a little more credit. And I think just like positivity is contagious, I think negativity is contagious. And I think, you know, everyone's kind of had their attitudes down on the Tigers. And I think that's kind of just, it's spread. And I think people are just kind of afraid to speak out and say some positive things about this team because it's just been so negative for so long. But you did say some positive things. I was surprised. You surprised me there.
You're a realist. A lot of positivity. Are you kidding? Who's happier than me?
That's true.
Come on.
Yeah, but I will say to the Austin Meadows point, I do really like the point of his brother being there and just, you know, this is going to be, he's had a full off season to hopefully get used to Detroit and settle in. And I really would like to see him be in Detroit long-term. He has 2 years left, I believe, until he's a free agent. I would be okay with him being our long-term DH, maybe signing him into a deal to his early to mid-30s. I would like to keep him around. I think, you know, like you said, he's going to be a lot more comfortable with his brother, and I think there's going to be a lot of good vibes there. And I expect to see a lot of good things from him for not only this year, but hopefully for the future as well.
It's an easy job to claim right now because Cabrera's going to retire. The job is wide open. If he hits, they'll keep him around. It's a very simple thing. Hit, you got a job. Don't hit, you don't got a job.
Yeah. Well, we know he can't hit. He's shown that before. But yeah, is there anything else you guys want to add, go over before we get out of here?
No, I just want to say, you know, Raj wanted to invite a loyal listener who asked a lot of great questions. He has started that with Nick tonight. Thanks for coming on. You were great. It was a lot of fun talking to you and meeting you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys extending the invite. Would have been good to have Rogelio and Chris on as well too, but I appreciate you guys both, Uper and John. Honestly, it was a blast. Looking forward to talking to you guys again over Twitter or what have you. But yeah, hoping for a great Tiger season, and we'll be talking soon, I'm sure.
All right.
Absolutely. But thank you guys so much for listening and or watching. This podcast should be up tomorrow, so make sure to listen. Well, if you guys have probably already watched the podcast, but maybe only caught parts of it. So if you want to listen to the whole thing, you make sure to check it out wherever you get your podcasts at, and make sure to subscribe Tiger Minor League Report and to this YouTube channel as we're trying to get to 1,000.
If you're out there, you got to tell your uncles, your cousins, brothers, your grandma.
We got to talk about this. You've been on this podcast for how long? And it took you till today to subscribe to us.
Better late than never, John.
Did you even have YouTube? Like, do you know? Well, you know YouTube. What? You had YouTube, right?
Yeah, I guess I did. Sure. But I'm not a big YouTube user. So, you know, I'm old, John.
I understand.
I still have this, John. I still have books. Okay. Books. Yeah, I know you're not familiar with this concept, right? But I still read a book now and then. So. I'm not always on YouTube like you kiddos.
I mean, I was going to be honest, because I typically follow everything that you guys are putting up on social media and Twitter for the most part. So, but when you guys were talking about it, just hammering the subscribe button, I was like, okay, like, let me just go onto my YouTube account and make sure that I'm subscribing just to get you guys over the hump. But I'm with you, Yupra. I'm not necessarily always on YouTube, but hey, anything to help the cause. So
we appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely recommend. I was checking out some content, watched all the videos over the weekend, so it was definitely worth it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Nick. But yeah, thank you guys. Thank you everyone for being in the chat. We'll see you probably again on Thursday. But for John, for the other John, for Nick, you did a great job. Nothing but positive things to say about you. We will see you guys in the next one. Take care.